Hello and welcome to Architecture Masters, the podcast from the London Festival of Architecture. I'm Owen Wainhouse.
So my name is Rahel Shaw, and I'm the managing director and founder of RAS Architects.
This week's episode was recorded in Addis Ababa as part of a series of episodes we're bringing you from East Africa to explore ideas around identity and architecture. Identity is the theme of this year's London Festival of Architecture.
And here is the coffee.
Oh, look at that.
This is the Ethiopian coffee.
It smells fantastic. I try this. That's beautiful.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
On the programme this week is Rahel Shaul, founder and director of RAS Architects, one of the leading architecture practices in Addis Ababa in Ethiopia. Rahel originally studied architecture at the southern campus of Addis Ababa University, before working for a time in Scotland. Soon after graduating, Rahel established ABBA Architects in partnership with a friend, before going on to form RAS Architects. She's gone on to win numerous awards, including the Aga Khan Award for Architecture in 2007, and was shortlisted this year for the Royal Academy's Dorfman Award. The practice has developed an impressive track record of work on embassies and cultural institutes in Ethiopia, including designing the British Council's office in Addis, along with the Council's in-house design team. I joined Rahel over coffee in a practice in Addis, where I started by asking about the current size of the firm.
Yeah.
So we were talking earlier, how big is the practice now?
It's about full-time 16 to 18 people, okay. Sometimes 14.
Yeah,
depends on the where we
fluctuates
are.
Fluctuates and depends on projects and things. Yeah. And so what I'm kind of interested in, before you set up, I mean, a lot of these podcasts were interested in people founding their own practices and what that means, but where did you work before you set up by yourself? What was the...
Previous 12 years, I was in another partnership.
Okay.
That I started with another architect.
Okay.
So we worked there for 12 years.
Wow.
As partners.
Yeah.
So which means from when I graduated.
So almost straight away from university, then you set up by yourself.
Yeah. Okay. I had a two-year internship.
Okay.
Very, very interesting work.
With a practice in Addis? Or?
It was a church and theology building that was... concept was designed, actually, by our design instructor at the university, who asked us to join him. He's a Scottish architect.
Oh, really? Okay.
So we joined him, and it was we were working on the project site for 2 years.
Okay.
And that,
as a kind of architectural assistant, were you? Was that?
Yeah,
sort of
we did the detailing, we did the construction supervision, because we're training people on site. So it was a very important stage in my life, straight from
university,
school to engage in that kind of hands-on design construction approach. Yeah. So it was obviously the standard was higher because he was a Scottish architect who came with, you know, the higher standard of architectural process. So for it was the perfect opportunity
to
for me.
To learn quickly.
And on the ground. Because you could just be an architect. But this was like we were in the office and we'd run out to have that detail built. And there were a lot of, because it was a church project, it was you know, very inclusive. We had a lot of people from the boys that were training and small contractors that were involved in many things. So we were there for 2 years. And,
on site. So we'll talk maybe a little bit later on about the process of, you were saying earlier about being spending a lot of time on site as part of your work here. But I was interested then in your kind of route into architecture. So you studied in Addis, did you? Where did you study architecture?
Yeah, I studied architecture at that time. It used to be called the Southern Campus of the Addis Ababa University.
Okay.
Building College.
Yeah.
My background, I went to school, elementary high school in Ethiopia.
So when did you start thinking, I mean...
Of architecture?
Yeah, and about buildings and about things around... Are your I mean,
you're... So when I was very young, they used to give us, I mean, this is in very young, like I used to take art classes in school till fourth grade.
Okay.
And there I remember I was kind of good. I loved it. But then that's it. I mean, in our next years, I never saw art. I never thought about it. But I used to live in Piazza, which is a very beautiful neighborhood, an older neighborhood in
Addis.
Addis Ababa. Yeah. So I believe that in a way that influenced me a lot into not thinking, because I didn't know what architecture was, honestly, because I grew up in the communist, in the socialist time in Ethiopia. Right. And there was, you know, we just went to school, came back, and that's it. So really not many books, not any information that others. So we were quite secluded in a sense. It was just going to school, coming back. But I think the first really knowledge of architecture was at first year university at the science campus in Aratkilo. Okay. So I went there and I really didn't like all the, you know, grueling, you know, it was very competitive. But on the 6 month, after one semester, I saw a poster that said, if you're interested in architecture, on this date, come and take exams for...
So you'd gone to university originally studying something else, had you?
No, so we have a general 1 year where you go, everybody goes either into science or art.
Okay.
And then...
And then you specialize.
Specialize on the second year.
Okay.
So basically, I wanted to be a geologist, actually.
Right.
Because I was very interested in... I just love the outdoors and...
Yeah. Interested in the land and the...
The land and the landscapes, because our, you know, although I didn't really thinking back now, it was not a conscious decision, but I always loved something to do with the outdoors, nature, materials, things like that. Yeah. So I said, okay, geology, because it's not as boring as this subject. Geology will take me out into the, you know, because we have quite a history as Ethiopians of, and a heritage of architecture and buildings, obviously. So I was always into that, and I love traveling within Ethiopia.
Yeah.
So I said, okay, maybe geology, something like that. That takes me out from the office space. So, but this architecture was interesting. What is architecture?
Yeah.
So like two of me and my friend were like, of course we're going to go there. We're just going to sit for exam. It was 360 kids, and they were going to take only 22. So we're like, we're never going to get in. And we did get in, 22.
You and your friend,
Both got in. And we went into building college, which is another campus completely. And I think the moment I walked in, that was it for me. And I started, like, really loving what I was doing. And it was communication design, sketching, and all these things. But it was so much interesting because, for me, the whole idea of architecture, when I understood it, it's like... It's not something that, you know, you do it on a table and that's it. It's something that you take into reality in a real sense. So that's how we knew, personally, I knew what architecture was. And we had not a very big library, but enough to take us out from the Ethiopian scene and go into international, you know, architecture scenes. And
so there was, read at about university it, then, the kind of influences were... Some of them were international, were they? You were getting kind of...
Actually, most of them were international.
Right,
so our curriculum and our studies was all about, you know, very international scenes.
Okay.
I don't know if... for me, I was always kind of thinking down to materials and what about the Ethiopian? I remember thinking that kind of thoughts.
There's kind of a conflict there almost, do you think? The kind of international teaching versus all the international... Because I'm interested whilst I'm here seeing that, you know, some of Ethiopia's, you know, thinking about some of the churches in Lalibela, you know, the real history of architecture.
So we never got to learn that. That's what I'm saying. So it wasn't in the context of our Ethiopian heritage. Yeah. So it was always a project, and that project would be, you know, up to international standards, let's say, that you design. And of course, that really helped us not just remain here. I mean, Lalibela is, you can remain in your heritage, but obviously you have to go with the times as well.
Yeah.
So everything has to be timely.
Yeah.
And so it was very interesting that in your mind you're going out to see all this, because we didn't travel at that time.
Yeah.
But I think my second biggest, after that impact, was actually traveling. So okay. I traveled to the UK for the first time in okay. the 90s. And I
whilst
I had,
you were at university?
Yeah. While I was at the university. Okay. And at that time, young people didn't get passports to travel because, like I said, it was not an area that... But I had an invitation from friends in Scotland. And they said, it would be nice for you to come and even work for 3 months, be an intern for a month. And I said, is that possible? I said, yes, it's possible. Yeah. So my dad said... Anything is possible. You just actually, I got my passport, which was so funny, and I traveled to the UK for 3 months from London all the way to Skye in the north.
Wow! Okay.
Yeah, and I worked for 1 month as an intern in Glasgow.
As an architectural
intern. Yeah.
In Glasgow. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you remember who the firm was? No.
Oh.
No. We'll come back. We'll edit that if you remember.
Yeah. If I remember, but those. That was quite impactful for me as well, because here you have your, you know, national, you know, heritage, all the buildings, beautiful. Like I said, when I grew up, it was Piazza, that beautiful neighborhood. For me, what was interesting was the way we lived, not only the buildings. It was very open, and it had an influence of the Italian era. It had an influence of the Addis Ababa style with... Ethiopian style architecture with mud. So it had everything, and it had, and the people who inhabited there was everybody, basically, those who have, those who don't have. It was shops. It was, you know, it was a very beautiful way of growing up for me because it was, we were open, we were free, we'd go everywhere. And be really, you know, you go out. We used to live in an apartment, but we'd go out and you have the street and the people and the, you know, right there, you know,
Kind of really urban.
Very urban okay. neighborhood.
Yeah.
So that's how I think I got the, you know, you kind of learn to live with people of different kinds, you know.
That's the amazing thing about cities,
yeah,
I guess.
And Addis as a city, obviously, because of them, you know, traditionally, of course, we're not really colonized, so you kind of have that little influence, but not really. Mm-hmm. So it was very, you know, the urban fabric was all, you know, about, as we talked earlier, about identity and feeling Ethiopian, and that Ethiopianness being the culture, the mixing of, you know, different ethnic tribes, the mixing of different religious institutions, the mixing even in the urban landscape of rich and poor, haves and have not. I mean, there's no seclusion at that time. When I grew up, everybody was in the same pot, in a sense. So that really... I think influenced my life, you know, as a person. So,
Glasgow then must have been a real
I loved Glasgow.
Change. I mean, I kind of in terms of, it's an interesting city, Glasgow. I mean, but even climactically and accents and everything, you must have felt. I mean, did that make you feel more? Often, when people move elsewhere or work somewhere else, you feel more your kind of identity. You feel more maybe Ethiopian living in.
So I lived with one friend.
Okay.
She was doing her master's there.
Right.
She was Ethiopian.
Okay.
And she was living with, you know, British, I don't know, Scottish.
Yeah.
And of course the accent was very different, but we already had, like I said, my teacher was a Scottish.
Right.
So,
so you'd come across.
We had friends, for me it was, the city was amazing. Yeah. My first exposure in the international scene. So that's, but it was such a positive,
kind of experience.
Experience
there.
For me. And traveling through, and even I remember I was on the bus from London to Glasgow, and you can tell the difference not only in landscape, but in languages.
Yeah.
And
it
was very fascinating for me. But it's the same in Ethiopia. Yeah. You know, you travel through the countrysides and you find that difference and sameness in a way. But experiences of my school time was many, you know, we were very few women, just counting, maybe we were 10.
In your class?
In the whole school at that time, from first to fifth year. It was like, do I belong? Yes, yeah, I do. Right. And loving architecture, not liking the hard work, but that being part of life. But we did graduate in 91. I graduated, and it was, for me professionally speaking, it was, like I said, to make a choice, either to remain here, which, because in 91 there was a change of government, and you know, it was quite chaotic. It was, and you could have gone anywhere.
So you
and
had
been
the
anything.
You kind of, it was a conscious decision.
It was a conscious decision
to stay, said, rather than
to stay, because because the thing was, number one, I got this fascinating theology project, building a church and theology, and I said, who will, at just graduating from university, who will get this fantastic project? So I'm one of the few who's really lucky to be involved in this, you know, life-changing experience. And it was life-changing for me as an architect. So after we finished those 2 years, actually people would come and say, who are the young people?
So you kind of made that, that lucky break
me
for
and
a
my
project,
team.
Really,
exactly.
That you made a name for yourself through a project.
Me and that team, my friends, we set up the practice that ABBA Architects. And we worked there
for... So the previous name was
ABBA. ABBA, okay. A-B-B-A Architects. Okay. So. And so I, we worked for 12 years. It was a time of excitement for us as young architects, and not really, you know, architecture at that time, you know, people really were not aware of the use. There were some people who would know what architecture is. And so for us, it was, we're young, we're idealistic, we were, we didn't have nothing, but we have, you know, the tools, we had the knowledge, and we're willing to, you know, just find anything and everything to work for. So we worked from small residences to service quarters, even to interior, small interior jobs, until, and we built our name very slowly. And what was good was, at that time, it was the perfect time, because after the change in government, also Ethiopia's, you know, socioeconomics, everything started to change. So people were investing in properties,
economy
picked up, and then, you know, now it's the fastest growing nation in Africa, in the world, and there's so many construction projects. But I think for us, and it's the fastest, you know, Addis Ababa is urbanizing so fast. And as an architect in the field, and maybe for everybody, but for us especially, it was the perfect time to kind of learn along and find your niche. Like I said, I was very interested in smaller, not in scale or in money, but in the human aspects. How does it relate to environment? How does it relate? I was more interested and fascinated always with that. I was always wanted to work and explore new ideas. Of, I love contemporary designs, but also merging it with
traditional
anything that we can do, you know, whether it was material-wise or spatial configurations, or just working within the beautiful landscape of Ethiopia, because even in Addis, in the city, you always have some kind of landscape. You see that it's all up and down and mountains, hills. You
in
have views towards the distance.
Really intriguing distance kind of lulls you after
exactly,
the city.
Exactly. So even in a small compound of 300, 400 square meters, you'll have a 3 meters level difference. How do you deal with that? And for me, it's the smaller things in design that really excite me. I mean, engaging in those smaller values and
That's fantastic. And I'm interested then, you were talking about making a decision not to leave the country and to practice overseas, but maybe a lot of your work now is working on either kind of cultural, so you obviously worked on the British Council's office in Addis, but a lot of embassies and you know, cultural, you know, foreign, with foreign architects, I guess. And I wonder whether that's a kind of that's a way, in a sense, you've kept that kind of international link in your work.
I mean, like I said, I think early on I was influenced, of course, my parents. My parents taught us to love our country. I mean, And, you know, the whole idea about your identity, you know, not only as an as a country, I mean, but as yourself, you know, how are you centered and how are you present where you are? So for me, it was like being present at that time when I had a choice. I said, okay, what is really, and I was then in my, you know, early 20s. Yeah. And I look back and said, it was really maybe one of the biggest decisions I made to stay, because all my family actually are in the US,
right,
even at that time. And I said, must have been this connection to the land, to the land. People. And I just love people so much, and I like interacting.
Yeah.
So that process of whether it is with my Ethiopian fellows or whether it is with international people, I think the whole idea of if you're content within yourself and to do something right there at that moment, and it's then important. Leave the future... you know, to be whatever it is, that's the thing. Sometimes, you know, we overthink, you know, I want to be this. And I, when people ask me that, I say, I don't want to know in 5 years what I'm going to be.
Yeah.
I will reach there when I reach. Yeah. So for me, engaging with international, like I said, started in school. We had our instructor, and then he influenced me very much. And it just goes on, because... if you are there, if you're, you know, even say, you know what, I don't know when people approach you, but I'm willing to learn and I'm willing to collaborate, because I have a lot to give you, not only that way around.
Yeah.
And you're just open and you just learn. So for me, each and every collaboration was a learning process, but also I feel I give a lot back to the team. And it's not a one-way process.
No, no.
Because
even in, I mean, that's what's kind of quite interesting for me, even in architecture school, really.
Yeah.
I'm often struck how in, particularly in the UK, you're often in taught by people who are not much older than you, you know, often recent graduate.
Yeah.
And that, you know, it's a process of learning together on some, you know, people there to facilitate that learning. And is that, so just kind of jumping back a little bit then to university, it's interesting, you've just come from Rwanda, where it's a, yeah, the Rwanda, University of Rwanda's architecture program is very recent, it's a very new course, and very few architects in the country. Has, I mean, are there many architecture schools in Ethiopia? I mean, are there, is it a...
Yeah, and it's actually interesting that you're asking that, because lately I've been very much interested, and I work a lot with young people, and I think apart from doing architecture, because I, like I said, I love people and I love working with people from the ground up, I think my purpose is not just being an architect here, but as an Ethiopian, as an African architect, as a woman, also going through all this that I'm, my life, I have a lot to give and be a role model, because we all need that kind.
Yeah.
So what you were asking is really very important in that knowledge sharing and being... part of your community is much more important. And so impacting that community, the people that you work with, the young architects. So when I graduated, like I said, when I went to university, it was just one university. We were graduating maybe 23 per year.
Yeah.
So we all knew each other, basically, at that time. Now, because I'm kind of trying to reach the universities, go out to, you know, give lectures, and I have a lot of connection. We have 22 universities now in
teaching
Ethiopia.
Teaching
architecture, private and public, government.
Yeah.
So as a lot of...
It's really grown as a...
Yes,
yeah,
So, and which means that we have more to impact. I mean, we have more, a lot of work to do in trying to, because all these young people who are coming out of the universities, you know, what do they have? Maybe I had that opportunity for internship. Many of them might not. So how can we be an influence for
to
many?
Create opportunities.
So, yeah.
It was really, I mean, I was kind of really interested in that role model idea. I think what really struck me in Kigali was the idea that people are going through, I mean, still a very small cohort of, and maybe it's similar to how Ethiopia was 20 years ago,
exactly.
That where, you know, if you're going through the first school of architecture, where do you look for role models? I mean, if you're going through, if you're training as an architect in London, you know, there are hundreds of people you might look at who look like you or sound like you, or you know, you might be able to relate to and think, I could do their job. But it must have been, certainly even now in Rwanda, hard to see those kind of role models. And I guess when you were going through university here, were there Ethiopian architects you were looking up to and thinking,
I want to be like, so basically there were a few offices, but already established, they were doing mostly public works because it was, and we knew of them, but we were so afraid to approach them, I mean, all of us, and they were doing serious work and, for the, so there was not that interaction. I mean, they were doing, as far as I know personally, I didn't have any interaction with our Ethiopian, so, but
I was going to say, I suppose the one thing though is that they were at least Ethiopian architects.
Absolutely.
Rather than, certainly in Nairobi, the, a lot of expatriate or colonial architects, and so maybe harder to
So actually what I'm saying as mentorship, but I remember when we started our new office, we had nothing. We didn't know. I mean, being in school is different than opening a business, practicing, and we had no idea. So we used to run to all these big offices, and we have a contract. What does a contract look like? And so they actually helped us. Yeah. I mean, if you asked, they would help.
Yeah.
It's just that there was not that platform for discussions. That's what I'm meaning. But I was, even at that age, I used to be, I was very much involved with the Association of Ethiopian Architects, and I was actually editor for 3 years for our magazine.
Wow.
So I was very much involved in, you know, going to all these buildings, talking to the architects. So I was always like, this person was into everything. So I used to love to write. And so that kind of, like I said, Ethiopians, we have maybe in a kind of secluded, but also very independent and very, how do you say, you know, there's a lot of pride in being an Ethiopian. And I remember that from my parents.
Yeah.
You know, so that is the identity part, you know. So we did go through many, you know, problematic times through the years. But I would say when you come here into Ethiopia, there's that energy of the people that I love personally. And I'm, you know, one of them who say, yes, we can do things ourselves. We do. Of course, we need to open to knowledge. Yeah. And that's what I do when I collaborate. I say, okay, even if it's, you know, this way interesting or that way, for sure we've used all the knowledge, because in a way we didn't have systems, we didn't have standards, in a way we didn't, so all these projects I have compiled so many standards and knowledge and you know, all these things. So it is a process of learning, it's a process of compiling, it's a process of getting knowledge and sharing it on. So
do you have people now coming to you asking the same questions you were asking of,
absolutely I mean, so many, you'd be surprised. And it's nice because I say, okay, you want technical specification, let's there is the digital copy, because we don't have those things that come to others. Maybe the context is so different that we're working in a sense we don't have all those materials. You know, some architects come and ask me, okay, do you have for example, software, do you buy? I mean, that is out of the question for many people working here. Or do you have, you know, British standards? We don't have British standards.
No.
We don't have South African standards. So the thing is, either you can say, you know, I don't know, or you can say, yes, I mean, standards, I'll read it, I'll know it, and I'll work on it. So on the next project, it will be easier. So all the standards, all this, you know, fees, you know, minimum fee scales, all these things that you know, even as a master plan, standards, codes, building heights, regulations are always changing and shifting.
Right.
So it is within that context that you're working. And further to that, it's advocacy. I mean, when clients come, you have to or even when they're not, you have to talk why architecture, design, process, detailing, documentation is important. Because most people now think that it's just, you know, on the first few schematic and preliminary design that you need to build an eight-story building.
Yeah.
So it's like, how do you say to people, but it's more than that.
So these are the same arguments the world over, yeah, I think. Yeah, I mean, it's really challenge. Yeah, that's. And then we were talking about time on site, which I thought was interesting, and perhaps having to spend more time. I mean, you said about half your time you spend on site, making sure the quality is. Yeah, I guess you. Yeah, it's very easy for someone to design a building, and then the real question comes in the implementation, I guess, in the real building.
Yeah.
And that's, you just have to spend time on site, do you?
Absolutely. I mean, like I said, if you go through the times that, you know, developing the concept of architecture and practice and design, it's the same as the whole industry is still growing.
Yeah.
You know, so we have contractors, we have clients, we have us architects, engineers, everybody's like doing what they feel is right. So within that, myself, I love working on sites. I actually enjoy it because it gets you closer to the people who are working on it. And once they know you and once you know them, it's very easy to influence them. So if I send drawings, number one, do they understand it, first of all?
Yeah.
I know some of them don't. I don't mean the engineers, but maybe the... And they will build it, but they might not build it the way
according
you like it.
According to the drawings,
And number two, it's like such a fast growth. You know, everybody is like fast.
Yeah.
So how do you influence that? Okay, you can be fast, but, you know... Or you can do this in this time, but do it well.
Yeah, don't cut corners.
Don't cut, you know, all these things. And your presence matters. And there are always that relationship, I think, site to office is very important. In a way, you're empowering them to do their utmost, their best.
Yeah.
And that knowledge for them not coming from somebody who tells them what to do, but works with them and encourages them that at the end of the project, we're all gonna, you know, be winners. We're all gonna be recognized for this. We're all gonna be proud. And it begins with saying, you know, this building will be a heritage. It will be a landmark. It would be your signature. Yeah. So I think I love to engage from the engineer, from the contractor. And the contractors are not on the other side of the table.
No.
You're working together. You fight a lot. I do fight a lot. But the idea is also how do you encourage that participatory, our building, our product.
I think that's really interesting, being part of one team rather than coming in and trying to impose your will on, you know, you will do it like I say.
Yeah,
And then it's, I mean, I was wondering about those kind of cultural differences being on site and being, whether there's, certainly, I don't know, maybe historically, maybe not, the idea of, in Britain, you'd have men building on sites and maybe some female architects would find it an uncomfortable environment to be in. On site, you know, is that the same here? Do you find it as a woman being on, you know, you said there aren't many, is that still the case? Not many female architects in Ethiopia? It's still a predominantly male discipline.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Especially in the practice. I mean, we have many women architects nowadays, which is really nice, but also they then go into academia.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand too, because like you said, it is, I don't know, I've never practiced in London or elsewhere, but I think being on site, I mean, I remember previously, like let's say 15 years ago, 16 years ago, they wouldn't even listen to me. They wouldn't even look at me. I'm talking about the builders, the, you know, people who do paint work, or, and I wouldn't be offended because I see how they see me. you know, as a woman who cannot give instructions to us. And it kind of annoys you, of course. You might be upset, but you're like, okay. And then sometimes we don't listen to me. I look at the engineer and say, can you please explain and tell him to do that? But the thing was, I think I built up a reputation because I was really consistent and insist that they accept me on the sites. That's it. I think right now I've worked with so many contractors for the last 25 years. And like I said, those young engineers and are now big contractors. Yeah. And they bid on my projects. Yeah. So they know my standard.
They've grown with you as a practice, really.
So 25 years is a long time. And I have a lot of young engineers who are now really good contractors. Yeah. And those who are big contractors, we grew together, they know that we will not, I will not be appeased unless they give the best that they can. And so we're always like, you know, sometimes like, demolish this wall.
Yeah.
And they would say, oh, but they know I'm very fair too, you know?
Yeah.
Fair in the sense I can tell them, okay, you can get away with that. Can we just do it to make it look better? Yeah. But and you cannot do it from the office.
No, you have to go build there. That personal relationship.
You have to, yeah. And, you know, have the Ethiopian coffee in the middle and fight with 20 men and I'm the only woman. Yeah. It's always been like that, always. Yeah. And I have many stories to tell. But I think if I wasn't really on the ground, I don't think projects would have been successful in the way they are, because it's a teamwork.
Yeah.
It's
coming on to that success then, you've been recognized for a number of projects through awards, you know, the Aga Khan Prize, the recently shortlisted for the Royal Academy's Dorfman Award. I was wondering about how that international recognition starts to come in. Is there, I guess I'm more aware of the international awards out there. Is there an Ethiopian architecture award, or, you know, how does recognition work within the profession in Ethiopia?
Mm. I think throughout the years it's... you know, either you talk about your work, you know, you're on TVs or radios. I mean, there's platforms like that. Like I said, we have an association that goes back all these years. So either you do that or your work eventually gets appreciated. And each and every time we finish, for example, one project, the British Council, for example, we had students coming. And we laid out all the drawings. I gave a lecture of the process. And every time the Netherlands Embassy, we're always taking students there. And so we're always engaged. I'm always with the university, with the institutions, and just present and, you know, encouraging young people. And, you know, these young people, they come, for example, and ask you, how do you get all the nice projects? And I'm like, you really don't get all the nice projects. You make them nice projects. Yeah. So it's funny in the sense because, and I love these interactions because it tells you very simple question and it's a very simple answer. So it takes dedication, it takes hard work, it takes being on the sites, traveling to the countryside, you know, and I'm a mom, I have two children, I'm married, I'm a woman. And instead of that being something that holds us back, for me it's something that is more, because you can be like a loving mom in a way and have that, you know, kind of... drawing people towards you, like you know, connecting to your children. It's the same thing. So that connection is what will forge throughout, you know, generational. And people say you're very reachable, that's why we like it. And I'm like, yeah, why not? You know, I have to be reachable. And there's always interns and students, especially young women, always come into the office. I tell them, I don't have really work for you, but please sit and just use the office, be in the space so that you learn.
You pick up through osmosis and through seeing the work of others. And,
So, but recognitions, we just were actually in August, we were awarded best architecture piece for our work with the South African Embassy, collaborating with MMA architects from Johannesburg. So the thing is, the association recognizes talent, recognizes you know, inputs, and always we have from the association, we receive you know, not only just awards, but appreciations, letter of appreciation, just tells me that, you know, we are involved, you know, as an office or as an organization in Ethiopia. And for me, having that recognition from your own people, your own compatriots, is much more, in a way, is more important to me. And then the rest, if it comes, it comes. And sometimes, you know, in my case, it did come, and I'm also very grateful for that. But I think it you have to impact your society first. And I think for me, it's as an Ethiopian, but also as an African, really not going anywhere and succeeding in, you know, going to education here, going through learning ups and downs here, and succeeding, I think, within your own context is a big thing for me personally, and that's what I appreciate most.
Okay. And then, I mean, just kind of interesting thinking then about, I'm going to sort of change subjects slightly. Think about language. We were talking earlier on about kind of understanding the language of drawing, getting people to understand. Is the bulk of education, architectural education here, delivered in English or in Aramaic or?
Amharic.
Sorry.
Amharic. Yeah. Amharic is So the after ninth grade, that is high school, right?
Yeah.
Ninth grade, everything is in English, except of course our language.
Right, okay.
But so we have earlier English introduced early on, and universities are all in English.
So people studying architecture will have studied in English?
And all, not only architecture, but everything
all
else.
Right, okay.
So, yeah, you're quite competent.
Preparation there for working international collaborations.
Absolutely. But of course, as any language, you need your own, turn into it. I love reading. From young age, our parents were all into reading. And also knowing different languages, a little bit of German, a little bit of French. So able to communicate.
Particularly on some of the kind of embassy projects.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I warn my colleagues. I say, I understand what you're saying.
So when they start
be
chatting.
Be careful.
Keeps people on edge. And then I guess I know you've got another meeting shortly. Just keen then to think about your the kind of architectural influences in Addis, and maybe things that people are visiting architecturally, things you think are interesting that people should look at, obviously I'm going up to Lalibela. I'm really interested in that, the history and the idea. I mean, just an incredible idea of making buildings in the ground out of the carving workforce that must have gone into those buildings. But interested really then in maybe some more modern kind of buildings in Ethiopia that you think are worthy of people looking at or engaging with.
Yeah, so like you said, I'm still, you don't get enough of our the heritage part, you know. Ethiopia has so much to show architecturally, not only the Lalibela, but Aksum and all the, you know, past civilizations. But all the cities, if you travel around, have their own unique expression of architecture. Yeah. If you go to Harar to the east, you know, in Ethiopia, it's an amazing, you know, kind of Islamic architecture that's, you know, you're fascinated. The whole city is amazing, the old city. If you go to Gondar, it's the castles of the... if you go to the south, you have more the traditional, you know, vernacular architecture. But also in Addis, like I was explaining earlier, it starts with the old, older cities. Yeah. Addis is 130 years old only, but it is, you know, the progression from what it was. Now it's 10 times maybe the size, and you can tell the fastness of the urbanization. But the older buildings, if you go to Ntoto to see Menelik's palace, you know, the kings, and then the early 60s, 70s modern buildings that involved many foreign architects, and then eventually to the public buildings. And now the kind of contemporary, we have like nice landmarks here and there, you have to locate them. But I think it is such a mix of so many styles. And now, of course, the more modern glass facade buildings that are coming fast on the street. So if you go to Mercato, which is the largest market in Africa, it used to be largest open market, but it's now slowly evolving,
being covered and,
being high rises as well. But the whole city, and then now, of course, the new developments, the you know, social housing developments in the outskirts, it's just a lot of interesting things, depending on who is interested in what. So if you're only interested in the older side, you go to Piazza, you go to Mercato, you go to all the, you know, the north side, the mountains. Then if you're interested in urbanization and fast growth and social, so you go and look at. So there's such a lot to see in Addis.
And also, then I guess just kind of two final questions, really. One was interesting about talking about the rapid urbanization and the, I mean, infrastructure spending, I guess, comes in line with that. And one of the big projects in Ethiopia is obviously the railway line to the port in Djibouti, with Chinese involvement. Wondering about the level of kind of architectural, Ethiopian architectural involvement there with foreign financing, maybe, of infrastructure projects. Is there much collaboration there coming in with Ethiopian architects?
I am not aware of architects collaborating with all this infrastructural developments. We do have an urban planning institute that you know, lays out I think the groundwork for all these developments. The light rail, I don't know if you've seen it in Addis. That's one of the recent most important achievements. And it's, you know, many roads, infrastructure works to the outskirts are being developed fast with the, you know, the level of growth.
And in informal settlements.
Informal settlements.
I mean, is that kind of interested in how quickly, I mean, that's, I guess, resulted from rapid urbanization. Is there a kind of a process or a for people to move out of informal settlements and move on, kind of up the you know, the kind of property ladder, as it were, into more, in terms of turnover, maybe, in terms of people moving in and then moving on? Just interested in your take on informal settlements around Addis.
The like you said, the urbanization of Addis is so fast. I mean, even me, I'm a resident here for all my life. I mean, just last week I went to the north side to visit family on Sunday, and I couldn't find my way. You know, it's that fast, that level of change. You know, if you're not in one neighborhood the past year, then roads are done, and so that kind of change of fastness, you know, needs equal. You know, however much government is bringing in the social housing, there is more need, and people. I see even people working here with me are, you know, enlisted in a list that then you get to wait years or months to get into one of the social housing. So I think it's past of urbanization, the fastest urban growing city, and the need is there. I don't know, however much it's being met,
there's still more.
There's still more to do. So, but you see, I have seen people, you know, personally who have moved up the ladder when they got residents of these small apartments, one, two-bedroom, three-bedroom. It's a life-changing thing for those who got this opportunity. But there are many, many, many more still really suffering. And it is it's a challenge, you know, with always with urbanization.
And a challenge. And we share in London in terms of you know, providing housing for the people who want to live in the city. Perhaps that's a nice spot to end, bringing us back to London and urbanisation and the places we live. Thank you so much for your time. It's been real, for me, a fantastic introduction to architecture in Ethiopia. Thank you so much. And we look forward to seeing you in July when you're over at the Royal Academy for the awards.
Thank you so much, Owen. It's really nice to see you in my office.
You've been listening to Architecture Masters, the podcast from the London Festival of Architecture. On the programme this week was Rahel Shaul, founder and director of RAS Architects. Find out more about Rahel and RAS Architects at architecturemasters.org, from where you can also subscribe to the programme and follow us on Twitter. If you've enjoyed this week's episode, why not leave a review or a rating with your podcast provider, as this will help others to discover the programme. You can send any comments, questions or suggestions by email to hello@architecturemasters.org. Music for this week's episode was from Peter Lagono and Raw Music International, Kisumu Mixtape, released under a Creative Commons license and available via the Free Music Archive. You've been listening to Architecture Masters. In Addis Ababa, I'm Owen Wainhouse. Thank you for listening.